Rishus, Harav. Really, all I'm going to do today is explain the Mishnah that the Rav mentioned in his introduction. And it reminds me of a story that once one of the Asifas in Europe, in the Delhi Israel, Reb Chaim Loizer, Zeches Tadamu Vracha, spoke. And Reb Chaim Loizer was not a orator. He got up, he spoke quietly, he said a few words. And then, after Reb Chaim Loizer, Reb Meir Shapiro, the Levina Rav, got up and spoke. And he said, I'm only coming to explain what the Vilna Rav said. And every few minutes, and he was an orator, he would say, I'm only explaining what the Vilna Rav said. And then he would go on, and he would speak with fire and passion, I'm only explaining what the Vilna Rav said. After the drush, he stepped down, and Reb Chaim Loizer went in and gave him a shikayach, and said, Vilna Rav, I didn't know that I was such a good speaker. But after Reb Meir Shapiro put it into a different lugush, everyone thought that really it was all nechlal what Reb Chaim Loizer had said. So really, everything I'm going to say today is really nechlal in the short words that the Rav said. Let's begin with something we all know. It says in the Pasuk, V'yichan shal Yisrael neged ahar, famous Rashi, on Peter Mechilta, ki ish echad b'leid echad, that the entire nation was like one, with one heart, as one person. If you have the handout in front of you, there's a quotation from Reb Tzadok. Reb Tzadok explains the Maamar this way. He says that if people are interested in worldly matters, gashmius, nyan elam hazed, so then everyone wants something else. So everyone is different. But if everyone is interested after Iraq in the Ratzon of the Ribono Shel Olam, there is one Ratzon of the Ribono Shel Olam. Uvechein, it's Kish Evan Beleda. Now this is something which is not so simple, and it can lead a person to an error. People think that perhaps in an ideal world, everyone would be exactly the same. Kish Evan Beleda. Everyone would dress the same, everyone would eat the same, everyone would do the same things. And that's the ideal of Kiyash Yachar B'lei Yachar. And if everyone truly is following the Ratz of Hashem and the Ribono Shel Olam wants one thing, so everyone should be the same. And this is not so simple. Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu did not make us all the same. This famous Gemara, we said it's in Hedra number 3 on the sheet. Chazal point out that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu made the animals, he made flocks of sheep, herds of cattle. But Adam was Nivri Yechidi. There was a single person. Ultimately, it was split into two, Adam and Chava. And from that, the entire human race grew. So Chazal say, why was it that way? It teaches us several things. One is that a person, every yid, is an Olam Mala. So called Mekayim Nemshachas Yisrael. And Chazal says, "Lahagid gulasa shel Hakadosh Baruch Hu d'shem Hashem's greatness." Sh'adam tevei'a kamo marbeis b'chaisim echad. If a person mints coins, so each coin is the same. But if Hakadosh Baruch Hu minted every person b'tzalam alekim, and yet ein echad mihem deivul lachaveiro. Everyone is different. Everyone is different. And therefore, a person has to say, "Bishvili nivra ha'olam." The whole world was made for me. Now, this is a subject about which svarim can be written, and they have been written. But the idea is that every person is unique, every person is special, and no two people were sent to this world for the same purpose. There's a little quotation here. I want to read the words from a wall of Zeher Tzadik L'Racha number 4 on the sheet. He writes, "Kol Adam Uriya Chad Pa'amis." Every person that exists is unique. V'yeda Zayis Kol Adam. Everyone has to know. Ani, I, in Kaychaisai, in Tchumaisai, parts of Chonai Skulais Nafshi. Every person with his unique talents and inclinations, the uniqueness of his face, yechidi ba'olam. Then kolachayim achshav in echad at echad kamoni. Among the people that are living today, there is no person exactly like me. B'dayrish arvul loya kamoni. Go all the way back to Bria's olam, hundreds and hundreds and thousands of years. There was no one like me. But sofa dayrish loya kamoni. And go forward to the end of time. There'll be nobody like me. Imkang, if so, this is the important point. Hashem sent me here to this world for a unique, specific mission. No one else can do it. I don't do it. Rak ani, just myself. And a person has to know that. But when it gets down to the practical aspects of this, it's very complex. There is a lot to be said for conformity. When people act the same and do the same things, first of all, it contributes to group cohesion. We identify with a yeshiva if we dress and act like everybody else in the yeshiva. We identify with a kehila if we dress and act like everybody else in the kehila. We identify with an am if the am has a single standard. So that's something which is a positive thing. In terms of our becoming assimilated to the Umas HaOlam, if every yid was in fact different, every yid would find himself in a situation of one against the billions in the world. Now, it's not just one against the billions. If we are a group, if we identify with each other, if we share common experiences and common lifestyles, so we have numbers that make it easier for us to resist the temptation to become assimilated. There's a lot to be said for conformity. And furthermore, a person can make an argument that the Torah itself does such a thing. But the Torah is not individualized. The Torah itself speaks to broad categories. All men have these mitzvahs. All women have these mitzvahs. All kahanim have these mitzvahs. There is an expectation that people will observe the same shabbosos. They will observe the same amutayim. They'll wear the same types of tefillin, tzitzis. They will eat the same types of foods, avoid different ones. And of course, Chazal say, "Kol tikkun derabbanan kein deraisa tikkun." When the Rabbanan make takanas, they model their takanas after the Torah. So one can make the argument that the Torah itself imposes a regime of conformity. Perhaps we should do the same in our kehilas and in yeshivas. Now, I'll tell you a funny story. In yeshivas nowadays, there's an expectation. Sometimes it's enforced by the rules of the yeshiva, sometimes it just emerges that way. The Talmidim of yeshivas dress in a very similar fashion. They wear white shirts, they wear dark pants, dark jackets, and they wear hats. A number of years ago, there emerged a style of the people wearing sacks that were oddly colored. Let's just put it that way. Happy sacks. And this was very strange. You have a bacher. He's dressed like a typical yeshiva bacher. Again, the hat, the white shirt, the jacket, the pants. But his sacks are very flashy. So the Chinuchei Deis and the Yeshivas, whether this is something that the Yeshiva should take a stand on. Some Yeshivas took a strong stand. So in Toronto, there was a certain Yeshiva that made a rule about not wearing such socks. You had to wear dark socks. And it was a big thing in that Yeshiva. There was a little pushback, but they were able to successfully promote this. And one of the Chadarim in Toronto, the great eight Talmidim have a publication, and they interview various people in the community of Rabbanit and Rosh Yeshiva. So they interview the Rosh Yeshiva of that Yeshiva. And of course, there were no restrictions on what could be asked. So what would eighth graders ask the Rosh Yeshiva about? So they interviewed him and they asked him, what is the policy of your yeshiva about socks? So the Rosh Yeshiva gave a very, very long answer about the importance of wearing dark socks and why this is a rule in the yeshiva and so on and so forth. Anyway, this publication asked me to be interviewed shortly afterward, and I refused to be interviewed. And it's been a number of years, and they've been nagging me again and again and again to be interviewed. And I tell them, no, everyone thinks it's because I'm so humble and so modest, which is not the case. I'm really not that humble, not that modest. And I'm very happy to have my picture all over this publication. So the reason I don't want to be interviewed is because I'm scared they're going to ask me about the socks. And my opinion is a little different. And let me explain why I think it's different. Let's say you have a system of law. You have laws. The state of Illinois, the city of Chicago, they have laws. And the laws are ostensibly to benefit the population. Good laws, strong laws, make people happy, successful, peaceful, and so on and so forth. Are the laws going to be good for everybody? Or are there going to be winners and losers? Maybe there are some people that because this is the rule, won't be able to do something that would be very, very, very good for them. Let's say, for example, zoning laws. So we have zoning laws. For some people, these are very good. They maintain the stability of neighborhoods, peace and quiet. You don't want a factory going up next to your house. So a lot of homeowners are very, very much in favor of zoning laws. On the other hand, sometimes zoning laws can block the building of a shul, of a beis medrash, and the people want that very much. So there are people that are losers because of these laws. So when the state legislates, it has to be carefully shaken. Hopefully, there'll be more winners than losers. You don't want laws that are going to hurt the majority of people. But you understand that you can't help everybody. So for the majority, it will be positive. For a mean, it will be negative. What about the laws of the Torah? Are there winners and losers there too? So one would be tempted to say, the Torah is not that way. The Torah is perfect for everybody. But there's a Rambam in the Maran of Luchim, it's in the Shi, and it's worth reading, where the Rambam says an amazing thing. He says that the Torah also speaks to the majority. That there are yechidim that may be at a disadvantage because of one of the laws of the Torah. Let me give you a dogma. Let's say one of the halachas of Shabbos is that you can't drive a car on Shabbos. Operating an engine is one of the halachas havara, so practically you can't drive a car on Shabbos. Now this halacha has a tremendous, tremendous fringe benefit, which is that we have Jewish neighborhoods. Why is there such a thing as a Jewish neighborhood? Because we all have to live in proximity to a shul, can't drive on Shabbos. So as a result, we live in close quarters, and as a result, we have all the benefits of community. people are friendly and close to each other and supportive of each other. This is a fringe benefit, which is absolute the take. So the fact that you can't drive in Shabbos, if you could drive in Shabbos, then why would anyone want to live in a neighborhood where houses are so expensive? You can go out a few miles, 10 miles, 15 miles, buy a house for a fraction of the cost, and live like a wealthy man for much less. But this is the benefit of this halacha of Shabbos. Now imagine a person who is a not fluent person. He lives 30 miles from the nearest shul, and he wants to come closer to Yiddishkeit, and he calls up and he speaks to a rabbi, and the rabbi tells him, or he asks the rabbi, can I drive to shul on Shabbos? And the rabbi tells him, the halacha is no. The Jew cannot be machal Shabbos, he can't drive to shul on Shabbos. And as a result, this person is cut off from the potential of Kiruv. You can invite him, he doesn't want to come, he's not comfortable. So this is a situation where maybe this person is suffering because of halacha. If we could give him a dispensation, maybe he'd be better off in some way. The Rambam writes that the Torah speaks to the rays of people. But it's possible there could be a myriad of people who are affected in a negative way. And yet, everybody has to keep the Torah. Even the Yechidim have to be nichna and have to accept the authority of the Torah, because this is the Mesiras Nefesh that everyone has to have for the success of the klal. I have to do things which are not to my advantage, because this is for the benefit of the rabbi. That's what the rabbi says. What's interesting, just to point out, that this is really the oimek of a very famous count of Rabbi Belozhner. We know, Chazal tell us, the others kept Kol Terkul Achlei Midna. Avraham Avinu kept Kol Terkul, the Gemara says, even Erev Tavshilu. So the Ramban deals with the question, but we find there were exceptions. We find, for example, that Yaakov Avinu married two sisters, which is something that the Torah would ask Achisisha. So the Ramban, Parshas Vayetzeh, says that the Avos only kept Kol Terkul in Eretz Yisrael, not in Chutz La'aretz. That itself is a long drasha. Reb Chaim Volozhin says like this. He says, before Matan Torah, before the Torah was given, the others kept the Torah voluntarily. They foresaw Ruach HaKodesh, these would be mitzvahs that a Kodesh Baruch would give, and therefore they felt that this is a good thing, it's appropriate, it's spiritually beneficial to practice these mitzvahs. But if they saw and they understood that they were in unique circumstances, they weren't bad. So Yaakov Avinu saw Ruach HaKodesh, that the binyan of Klal Yisrael necessitated his being married to Leah and to Rachel. So even though this was something that the Torah later on would forbid, he understood that this was an exceptional circumstance, and because it was not obligatory at that point, he was justified in being married to two sisters. Once the Torah is given, you can't make such exceptions. A person cannot say, I am unique, I am exceptional, the halachas don't apply to me, because that is what the tzibui of Matan Torah is. It's Torah achas, mishpat echad, for everyone. That means even though there is someone who could make an argument, perhaps I'm exceptional, but that's the nature of an obligatory Torah. And the image is as the Rambam explains, that it's true. There may be, in theory, exceptional cases, but that's the nature of the law. Now, let's say a yeshiva is making rules, and the yeshiva says, well, in the same way that the Torah makes rules for everybody, we'll also make rules for everybody. But to be punished by, I mean, a very careful sheep. Can a yeshiva, can people who are, after all, boss of a dumb, make such shikul very, very difficult, very dangerous. Let's say you have a bachar. And the bachar, he conforms. He accepts the authority of the yeshiva. He accepts the rules. He's a good boy. He's not rebellious in any sense. But he feels that his individuality is being squelched. So now he has an opportunity. At least in one small area of his life, he can express his uniqueness, his sacks. That he can wear. So now this bachar is at peace. For the most part, he conforms, but there's one little vinkel, one little corner of his life where he can be himself. And you want to take that away from him? That's a very dangerous thing. So when we talk about rules and standards, you have to be carefully shy of every rule that may be for the benefit of the rabbin, may be to the detriment of the yachid. And you have to be very, very careful in making the issue cooler. Now here we're talking about a minor issue, which is sacks. Let's talk about a major issue. For example, what should a person's life plans be? I'll tell you another story. Many, many years ago, there was a family, a very fine family in Toronto, who had a daughter who was in high school, and she was considered a little rebellious. I don't know exactly what that means, but she was considered a little rebellious. So the parents called me up and asked me if I would be willing to speak to her. I guess they thought that maybe I had something to say. So I said, from Bosnish, oh, that we speak to her. So she came to my house, and I asked her, so what's bothering you? So she says to me, she says, why am I obligated to marry a husband who's going to learn and cuddle? So I said, who told you that? So he says, that's what we learn in school. That's what they tell us, that every girl is obligated to marry someone who's going to learn in Kayo. I guess that means that if the person ends up not learning in Kayo, somehow he failed, somehow they didn't do what they were meant to do, but this is the ideal. So I said, sounds like a very strange idea to me. Says, I would say that it all depends on the individual. That if an individual feels this is the type of life they would like to lead, and it's a very commendable, very noble life, then by all means do it. If you feel it's not the type of life that will give you seat book and happiness, then don't do it. So she said, really? Really? So I said, that's what I think. And that was the entire conversation. What was the same goal? I'm talking about a conversation that took place 25 years ago. What was the safe dover? She ended up marrying a very chashuv younger man who learned many, many, many years ago. It's now a mechanech. And she herself is doing great things for Klal Yisrael. But the point was, she only could do those things because she didn't believe that she was forced to do those things. She didn't believe that she had to do those things. She believed that this could be an expression of her own uniqueness, her own individuality. And that made all the difference. And she made excellent choices in her life, but only because it wasn't beinus. She wasn't forced to do this. So this is the first point I'd like to make, just to sum up, that we have to be very, very careful when we impose a regime of conformity, that we may be hurting individuals by not giving them the opportunity to realize their own individuality. Now, the next question is, what is the makai for individuality after all is said and done? We all have the same tariyak mitzvahs. Now, we know, anybody who's familiar with the Mesubas Yishar, when I say familiar with the Sefer, I mean familiar with the entire Sefer. Everyone knows the first parak, but if you're familiar with the entire Sefer, you know that the Sefer is divided into two parts. The first three Madregas of Sihirus, Nazirizus, and Nikius, these are the Madregas that Mesilas Yesharim says are necessary to be a tzaddik. The Madregas beyond, Krishna's Tara, Hasidus, and so on, these are the Madregas that are necessary to be a chassid. What's the difference? So Mesilas Yesharim writes like this, he says, a tzaddik is like an obedient child. An obedient child does what he's told to do. So we're given tayyak mitzvahs, we do them, we're called tzaddikim. That's what a tzaddik is. A chassid is a person who is a loving child, a child who wants to give nachas and satisfaction to his parents. So therefore he doesn't just do what he's told, but from what he's told to do, he infers exactly what would give his parents satisfaction, what would make them happy, and he acts accordingly. So say, for example, a parent tells this child, do your homework. Do your homework. So an obedient child does his homework. What does the loving child say? He asks himself, why are my parents asking me to do my homework? Because they want me to be studious, they want me to develop myself, they want me to grow, they want me to be successful in life. So the person who is a loving child, from that little remnant of do your homework, picks up what my parents really would like to see, and he acts accordingly, and gives them nachas. That's what a chassid is. And we see this show quotes the Maamar Chazal, that Ashrei mi she'amal b'Torah, v'ayis nachzu ruach l'yotzo. In order to know what a HaKadosh Baruch Hu really wants, you have to be amel b'Torah. You have to delve into the Torah and understand the ideas that underlie the mitzvahs of the Torah. And then you can give nachas ruach l'yotzo on the madrega of chassid. It happens to me that the words of the Mesilas Yesharim were written hundreds of years before by Rabbi Avraham ben Moshe Lerabba. There's a sefer called Sefer HaMaspik Lev Hashem. It was a Musa sefer written by the Rambam's son. And the Ramchal could not have seen it because the manuscript was only discovered many years later and it was translated from the Arabic. The Ramchal certainly didn't see it, but it happened to be that he says the exact same thing in great detail. With one interesting thing, that he says that the observance of mitzvahs, to be called a tzaddik, he calls derech harabim. It's the path of the many. And the observance of mitzvahs, to be a chassid, he calls derech miuchedes. It's the path of individuals. Everybody is chayav to keep tayyak mitzvahs. But chassidus is very, very individual. And the Mesilas Yesharim himself says this, number 11 on the sheet. The last paragraph of the Mesilas Yesharim, he writes that chassidus is going to be different for different people. Whereas the chassidus for this person is not a chassidus for that person. On the institutional level, the chassidus for a chassidus of Beis Medrash is not going to be a chassidus for a kiruv organization. Let me give you a moshel. When I first came to Toronto, so I was the rav of the Or Sameach Minyan in the Thornhill. And what was the minyan that was established before I came? So there was a minyan Shabbos, a very wonderful minyan, a lot of learning as part of the minyan. But after the minyan was a kiddush, and the way the kiddush was set up, the men and women sat separately, but there was no mechitza by the kiddush. That was the practice before I came, and I had nothing to do with it. Anyway, there was one Shabbos, one of the Mispavolim's son was an Eifrov, and the Chutanim were a very, very distinguished Hasidish family from New York, and they were coming for the Eifrov. And the message somehow was sent to me that they would be more comfortable if there'd be a mechitza by the Kiddush. So there was a glut. What to do? But this was a minyan, essentially, for people that were growing in Yiddishkeit. And where they were at, this was an appropriate hanhaga. This family was really in a different place. And for them, the appropriate hanhaga would be to have a mechitza. So I have to make this decision. I decided that Shabbos we're going to have a mechitza. And I spoke that Shabbos about the idea of hachnasa zorcha. The idea when you welcome guests and you want to provide for the guests and make them comfortable. So sometimes you have to do things that you're not accustomed to. Let's say you invited a guest whose standard of kashrus is a bit higher. You'd want to accommodate that. So, this is what I said. Uvechein, there was a mechitza. That afternoon, there was a woman that came to my house. And did I hear a parsha? And she said the opposite. She says, these are people that are coming. They have to conform to our standard, etc., etc., etc. Now, I don't know if I was right, if I was wrong, but the point is, if you think about it for a second, the Hasidus for a Hasidus Beis Medrash, or a Beis Medrash of Yeshiva Light, the Hasidus there would be to have the Mechitza. But if you're talking about an organization which is for the purpose of Kiruv Rechaikim and to the contrary, this might be miraculous. Some of the people that you're trying to be makare, then the chasidus may be, in this instance, to not have the mechitza. Now, let's say, for example, someone came up to me and said, I have a great idea for a kiruv in Norris and Mayak. So a lot of the people that are not religious like to eat shrimp. So why don't you offer shrimp at the kiddush? It would be great. We'll come. Trin is cure of opportunity. The Teretz is Pashut. Says, that's a halacha. And on that, there's no compromising. Says, kashrus is kashrus. Says, but, and again, maybe with the question of the mechitza, some people, some place can will say it also is a question of halacha, which can't be compromised. But the point is that there's the derech harabim, which is the scrupulous adherence to Tariyak Mitzvahs. And then there is the Derech HaYachid. And here, for every individual, there's a different type of chasidus. Just to illustrate this point, there's a very famous Ramban. Parashas Nasa coming up. By the Nasiim, so the Torah repeats 12 times the Korbanos of each Nasi. And the Korbanos were identical. So why does the Torah repeat it again and again and again? So Ramban says two roots and one shot. This is for the covet of each Nasi. Each Nasi was special. The Ramban says the second shot that although the Korbanos externally were identical, each Nasi brought them with a different kavan. For Nachshon ben Aminadav, who was a Nasi of Shechet Yehuda, each component of the carbon was symbolic of an aspect of Malchus, because Yehuda is the shape of Malchus. For Shevet Yisachar, Samuel ben Suar, Nasi Yisachar, this was the Shevet that focused on Limud HaTorah. Every component of the carbon symbolized an aspect of Limud HaTorah. For Zvulun, Eliyahu ben Chaylai, he was the Nasi of Shevet Zvulun. Zvulun was the Shevet were the supporters of Torah. Every component of the carbon related to support of Torah. That means 12 people could bring the exact same carbon, and every carbon was different. When a room full of Yidden put on film, you'd think everyone is doing the same thing. Everybody's hanachas film is different. Because Reuven does it with one kavana, Shimon does it with another kavana, Levi does it with a third kavana. And to a great extent, the chasidus, the individuality, is expressed not necessarily in external actions, but in the kavana, in the understanding. And this is an aspect of the Chassidus. The Gaon writes, and this is number 12 on the sheet, the second, third page, it says, "Kol Adam v'Adam yesh lo derech b'fnei atzmo leilev bo." Every person has his own way. Ki ein daitam daimus elozeh. They don't think alike. Then parts of fame daimus elozeh. They don't look alike. This is a minor chazal. I once heard someone said, you know, you never hear a person going over to somebody else and saying, "I don't understand. Why do you look the way you look? I am so handsome. I'm so good looking. Why don't you look like me?" Right? No one ever asks that type of question. Why don't you look like me? Why? Because we all understand. Everyone in parts of fame does. Everyone looks different. So why are you surprised that people don't think like you? To shame, shame parts of fame, Shabbos Kai, they would say in Shabbos. Each person is made a different way. Each person's brain is wired a different way. So of course people will think differently. And the Gaon writes that once upon a time, when a person wanted to know how he should live his life, he would go to the Navi. And the Navi, Ruach Kavsha, was able to direct him. And this is the meaning of the pasuk, "Lo Adam Ma'arche Leiv, Umi Hashem Ma'an Leilosha." That if a person would direct his heart to the Ribono Shel Olam, "Lo Adam Ma'arche Leiv," and then he would go to the Navi would give him a response. "Umi Hashem Ma'an Leilosha." And tell the person exactly how to live his life. He says, we don't have Navim nowadays. So how does a person do that? We'll get to that a little bit later. But the Gaon brings, there's a pasuk in Mishlei, which says, "Hoylech b'yashro yirei Hashem." If a person goes on his own individual straight path, that person is yirei Hashem. When the law is drachot, and the person who makes his path crooked, Bozei, Hashem scorns that person. So the Gaon says an amazing thing. Hoylech b'yashrai is because every person has an individual path. Sometimes you look over your shoulder and you see what someone else is doing, and you say, "But why don't I do that? I should be like him." A person panders to the crowd, but then he's not a hoylech b'yashrai. He's merely imitating somebody else. But Hailech B'Yashua, a person who follows his own unique path, that person is Yirei Hashem. Well, let's say a person is Nalayas Baruchah. Let's say a person goes on crooked paths. Why? Because he wants to conform to other people's expectations. HaKadosh Baruch Hu scorns that person. And the Gaon says, this is exactly like the Gemara says, that why is a Ganav treated worse than a Gazlan? A Gazlan pays Karen and a Ganav pays Kefal. Because the Ganav, who's a burglar, he steals under cover at night, is more scared of people than the Ribono Shel Olam. So the Gaon says a person who doesn't follow his own way because he wants to conform to other people's expectations is like a Ganav. He's more scared of people than the Ribono Shel Olam. And therefore, Bozei, that is the person that the Ribono Shel Olam scorns. So this is the first sakana. The first sakana is, if a person lives his life without realizing his uniqueness, his unique derech and avodas Hashem, because he wants to find favor in the eyes of others, that person is nullized rachav. That's a person that the Kodesh Baruch Hu scorns, because he's more interested in what people think than what the Ribono Shel Olam thinks. So how do you find your way? So let me tell you, there's a pasuk, and this pasuk came to my mind. I'll tell you how it came to my mind. It's a funny thing, but I hadn't gotten out of my mind for the last several weeks. There's a woman I know in another city who, she's an artist, and she designs interiors for Bate Medrash, Bate Knesses. And when she's commissioned to make an Aron Kodesh, so on Aron Kodesh, they put a postbook or a phrase or a statement. So every place is looking for something to put on top of the Aron Kodesh. So twice before she asked me if I had an idea. And both times, once was a shul, once was a yeshiva, they accepted the idea I had. So she called me for the third time a few weeks ago. If I had a pasuk, they should put in top of the Aron Kodesh. So I said, there's one pasuk that I would put, this pasuk. So she said, that's what you said for the other yeshiva. So it's already there, you can't use that pasuk. Okay. Got to go over something else. So I was thinking for a few minutes, not too long. So there's a pasuk in Mishlei. Chazal say about this pasuk that Ezel he parasha ketana. What small parasha is there? She called Gufei Teret Luyim Bo, which everything is totally in this pasuk. So this is in the pasuk. B'chol v'rochecha v'eihu v'hu yiyasher achesecha. You should know that you're going to live in all your ways, and he will straighten out your paths. So this pasuk, somehow it fell into my head. So I said, let me look into this pasuk and see, maybe there's a reason that this pasuk fell into my head. So the Malbim says an amazing thing. The Malbim says, well, you know, if in the Malbim's Mahalach and Navi, he knows that the Malbim holds there are no exact synonyms in Lashon HaKodesh. So he says, there's a derach and there's an orach. A derach is a broad road, it's a highway. An orach is a narrow path. He says that the drachim are clear. If I need to go from I'm amiss. I should look at a map to see how you get from Chicago to New York. But let's say you were going from Toronto to New York, which I do know. So you might take the New York Thruway. That's a derech. Big highway, multi-lanes, it's a derech. But once you get to New York, let's say I'm going with someone, I need to go to Borough Park, he needs to go to Flatbush. At some point, I go to the right, he goes to the left. That's an ayrach. An ayrach is a narrow path. The drachim are clear from the Torah. We know what the drachim are. But the arachos, the narrow paths, are not so clear. So, b'chol drachecha da'edu, if you follow the drachim of the Ribono Shel Olam, there's a special siyat d'shmaya b'hu yashar achesecha. He will guide you on the paths. Now the Malbim says the difference between derech and ayrach is, for example, let's say being generous. That's a derech. Generosity is a derech. But to know how much to give and to whom to give and when to give and how to give, those are arachos. I mean siyat d'shmaya. But it seems to me that there's another aspect. The difference between a derech and an ayrach is not just this is general and this is specific. This is what we do. The difference is everyone follows the derech. At the crossroads, I go on one ayrach, you go on another ayrach. And that's the point. The point is that the Torah gives us the drachim. The Torah is the derech harabim, it's the path for everybody. How do you know as an individual which way to go? This requires siyata d'shmaya. But the question is, so okay, when we had Nevi'im, as the guide says, that's how we were told. How do we do this Zman HaZeh? Let me show you the reason Netziv. The Netziv says, there's a pasuk in Kehelas, which says, V'halech b'darkei libcha. A person should go in the ways of his heart. So the Netziv says like this, he writes, She'en hiluch avaydas Hashem b'tmidu shol b'leyam m'shavim. Not everybody goes the same way. This person, his focus is on a melu sentayr. This person, he focuses on tefillah and avaydah. This person focuses on gemilas chasad v'kol shem shemayim. And even within each of these categories is different. In learning, some people will learn this way, some people will learn this way. In avaydah, some people will focus on this, some people will focus on that. How do you find your way? So he writes, "V'imbo adam nishal ezik derech yishar shidarvelo b'derech liyudo al zel amar halak b'dark and lipcha mashliba nimshachachulav." The way Akhenaten Baruch Hu sends messages is if your heart leads you in a certain direction, that is a clue min hashamayim that that is your unique direction. The truth is, this idea already is written in Chayvus HaLevavos in a different context. The Chayvus HaLevavos is writing about umnus, when a person is looking for a job or profession. So how does the person know whether something is suited for him? If he has a meshicha, if he's drawn to it, if his heart tells him to do this, then he should do that. I saw just recently someone wrote a book, and the title of the book is "What Would You Do If You Weren't Scared?" And that's a really good question. Because a lot of us do things because they're safe and they're secure. But if you really believe that the bonus one gives you parnasa, so there's nothing to worry about. A person could be misparnas in a conventional way, a person could be misparnas in an outlandish way. The real question is that what does the Kohen Baruch Hu want you to do? That's what's in your heart. And I read somewhere that the Lubavitcher Rebbe, the Chassadik Levracha, used to say the same thing about Shiduchim. When someone would come and ask about a Shiduch, is this Shiduch appropriate? Everyone has silence about Shiduchim. So he would ask, is there a Mashiach Balev? And if yes, then we can follow that. So this is some of the ways that the Rebbe sends a message. And having said that, I'll share with you an amazing guy. And that same pasuk, the guy says an amazing, amazing thing. Another way. B'chol v'rochecha do'ehu. Do'ehu is oisius da heivov. Do'ehu, da heivov. Heivov is the revealed term. Hey is chamisha chumshei seira. Vav is the shisha sifrei mishnah. If you learn the Torah of Nigla, you have what you need to know to follow the derech, to follow the broad highway. But you don't know necessarily what the arachol should be, the narrow paths, the individual paths you won't know. For that, you have to have an aleph. What is aleph? Now we know the word aleph, if you spell it out, is aleph lamed pei. That's how you spell the word aleph. But in reverse, it's pale. Pale is something which is wondrous. So that's the soid. That's the soid of Torah. So he says, when you learn Torah in depth, with the soidness of Torah, then you know exactly, even as an individual, what you're meant to do. That's b'chol v'rochecha do'ehu da heivav, but v'hu, who, heivav with the aleph, yashar chisav. They'll give you the guidance. Now, we're not badly soid, but I think what the guy is telling us is that if you learn Torah in depth, the Torah itself will give you guidance. If you learn Torah on the most superficial level, which is do'ehu, da, hey, vav, maybe it will only give you the generalities, not the specifics. But if a person learns the great depth, the even rav, then it's who? You're mechaber the aleph to the hey, vav, and the behu yasher archai secha. And the hour is late, and I see I have 5 minutes. So I'm going to try to put 2 ideas in, which I think are important to know. We spoke about the sakana of not following your own way and simply imitating others. There's another sakana I'd like to speak about for a moment, which is the sakana that when we think everyone is the same, we have unreasonable expectations of other people. We can't understand why don't people act like me, live like me. So I just want to share with you an amazing thing. Now, the Gemara in Shabbos tells the story of Shimon bar Yochai. It's timely, like it was long ago. They were in the cave for 12 years, learning Torah, according to the Zohar HaKadosh. They were learning from Eliyahu HaNavi during those years. And they came out of the cave. And wherever they looked, Reb Shimon Yochai and his son, Elazar Reb Shimon, burst into flames. So Abbasel came out and says, "I have to leave. If I'm made Abbasel, you want to destroy my world? Go back to the cave." They went back to the cave. After 12 months, they said, "No, Mishpat Rishon again is only the base Chayesh. You shouldn't have to stay here more than that." So the Baskel came and said, "You can leave now." So it says that wherever Reb Elazar Reb Shimon looked, again burst into flames. Wherever Reb Shimon Bar Yochai looked, it was healed. And he said, "Dai, Elami Eni Vata, the world is enough for me and you." And the Chapter story is like this. They lived in a cave for 12 years. What did they live on? HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave them a charuv, a carob tree. Now you know what carob is? Boxer. If you don't know what it's like, try eating your shoe. You'll get an idea what carob is. So that's what they ate for 12 years. And they drank water, they had a spring, and that's what they did for 12 years. They lived in a cave like that. They lived from Yohan of it. So they said, if we can live like that, everybody can live like that. So when they came out, they saw people were farming, they were plowing, planting, harvesting. What are they doing? Are they out of their minds? So they can also live in a cave and have a charuv and have a mayan and learn Torah from Yahweh. So wherever they look, burst into flames. So Kadosh Baruch Hu said, "Go back." So after 12 months, they came out. And the question is, that if after 12 years, they thought everyone should do this, so after 13 years, they should have been even less understanding. Because now they lived 13 years in the cave. And yet, now, when Elazar Reb Shimon came out, Reb Shimon Yochai, it wasn't the same. Reb Shimon Yochai was able to heal. Because he came to a greater truth, which is that not everyone is meant to be the same. Dai la'alo anivata. Yes, the world needs such people. The world needs people that can learn in a cave from Eliyahu HaNavi for 12 years, living on charuv and water. But how many people does the world need like that? Dai la'alo anivata. Says the rest of the world can live differently. And when they saw that Yid, who was running with the two bundles of Adasim, as the Gemara says. And they asked, "Where are you running? L'chavit Shabbos. Why two? One for Zohar, one for Shomer." So they said, "Oh, you see how beloved mitzvahs are to them. Each in his own way." Now on this Gemara, Rabbuna Peshischa says an amazing thing. It says in the Pasuk by Yosef, "Vayava Yosef is the Basim Ron of Aviyah." What was the Lashon Hara of Yosef? We know the Ma'amar Chazal. Says Rabbeinu Peshischa, the Lashon Hara was this. Yosef lived on a higher plane than his brothers. The Pasuk says, Yaakov in his bracha said, he's the Nazir Echav. He's the Nazir of his brothers. He's a level beyond. He saw that his brothers weren't conducting themselves in the manner of Chassidus that Yosef practiced. So he went and told Yaakov what, in a sense, was Lashon Hara. That I can do these things, and the brothers aren't doing those things. And that was the Dibarah. What did Yaakov do to tell Yosef? He told him, when he sent him on a faded mission, he says, "Go, Re'ei Shloim Achecha." Says Ibn Peshischa, "Shloim Achecha, see the goodness of your brothers. Don't go and see their failings." He says, "Your madrega is your madrega." And he brings the Gemara, "Dai la'ela mani va'ata." Yaakovina told Yosef, "It's enough for the world, me and you. The brothers, what they're doing is what they're doing." This sakana of failing to understand their individuality is really a double sakana. Because it's a sakana of not finding my own way, because I'm looking over my shoulder at everybody else, but there's also the sakana of having unreasonable expectations of everybody else, Because I think if I can do this, and I am doing this, everyone should be the same. To see Shloim Makacha, to see that everyone is different. And what's right for me is not right for you, and what's right for you is right for you, and would not be right for me, but it's still right for you. That's something we all have to learn. And one last point, please forgive me for going a little bit beyond, and this is kind of what Rav said. Individuality is not because the only thing that counts is me. Because I am the totality of the Bria, and what anyone thinks makes no difference, and I'm just going to be myself. The idea is this. Sfasem has written some Chidushei Rim on that Mishnah. He says, Kol ish nivra al davar yuchad. Everyone is created for a specific purpose. But that specific purpose is not to do something for yourself. It's because to make your contribution for Klal Yisrael, everyone has to be different. The Ramchal writes in Derech Hashem in a different context, like an army. In an army, you don't have everybody doing the same thing. You have the Air Force, you have the Navy, you have the infantry, you have the cavalry, you have intelligence. Put them all together, they serve the country. So if every Yid would be doing the same thing, that would be like an army where everybody is a pilot of a bomb. But there's no intelligence, there's no infantry, there's no... It's not an army. The army is specifically because everyone is doing what he should be doing to make his contribution to the cloud. So I just want to share with you an amazing remnants. It says about the Mizbeach, Avonim Shleimais, whole stones, you should build the Mizbeach, Loisivnes and Gozis, the mountain of cut stones. So some of the Avonim remnants. So where did these Avonim Shleimais come from? Mishnah say that you take stones from a riverbed. So the stones are whole stones. They haven't been cut with a knife. If not, you build the Mizbeach, not with cut stones. What's the Musa over here? If you built the Mizbeach with cut stones, you'd probably build it with stones that were cut to the same size. You'd quarry stones and cut the stones like bricks. Here in Chicago, they build with bricks. So all bricks are the same, and you build a building with bricks. If you could build a Mizbeach with cut stones, you'd probably cut all the stones to the same size and you'd build a Mizbeach, like out of bricks. Mm-hmm. In the Mizbeach, there's the halacha. It can't be a single stone. That's a batseva. The Torah asks us that. That's made of many stones. Says, we need the entire cloud. We need everybody to serve the Yom Shleilam. But not that everyone should serve in the exact same way. That would be gozes. That would be the stones cut to size. It's avonim shleimus, but every stone is different. And that's the idea. Our individuality is important, but not important because the fulfillment of life is in asserting my uniqueness. It's because in the building of Klal Yisrael, it's an ummah, everyone has a contribution to make, and everyone's contribution is a different contribution. And from that together emerges the Mizbeach, which is made of Avonim Shleimus. So, Bezras Hashem, when we look at ourselves, when we look at other people, we should have the siyat d'shnaya to understand ourselves, to understand the ways we have to follow, to have reasonable expectations of other people, and that from all of us together, the Ribono Shel Olam should be exalted. Thank you for listening.